So welcome to the Court of Appeals. We have one case set at 11. We're going to get started a little early and understand that counsel for the appellant is here to argue. Counsel for appellee will not be participating in oral argument, but as everyone knows, we have put in place a system where he is able to respond in writing if he so chooses within 3 days after the oral argument is posted on the court's website, as we usually do. So before we get started, let me introduce the panel that we have here today. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach. To my right, Justice Dana Womack. And I am Elizabeth Kerr. So with that, I will ask the clerk to call the court, to call the case.
The court will now call Brian Northcutt, M.D., versus Brian C. Stevens and Ricky Stevens. May it please the court, Mr. David Walsh, to argue for the appellant.
Thank you. You may proceed.
May it please the court, David Walsh for Dr. Northcutt. And I just want to comment on it's kind of an unusual time. Not only is this my first argument in person in quite some time, and I won't have to worry about Zoom stopping out as it did in my last argument three times for my opposing counsel. And it's also unusual that the other side is not showing up, so it's just an all-around unusual day for me. It's also unusual because I think this is the first expert report appeal I've argued in person in a decade. And I think that the law has become quite clear about what is required and not required. And at least in my practice, I'm very stingy about what I take and agree to accept to go forward. And I think this is one of those cases that meets the abuse of discretion standard to be reversed. And I think that's because there's nothing in the report that talks about proximate cause. And I know that there doesn't have to be magic words, proximate cause, or anything of that nature. While magic words of proximate cause won't do themselves, the lack of that is not fatal as long as there's an explanation of how and why the alleged negligence of the doctor or healthcare provider caused some harm to the patient. And that's what's missing in this report.
You don't think that that it could be inferred that the delay in retesting the decedent or calling in a surgical consult could provide some sort of common sense, I guess, basis? I don't know the medicine. Maybe it doesn't matter. So what is the medical consequence of this failure? Is there anything in the record about that?
There is nothing in the record about the medical consequence of the failure. I understand the inference that you want to talk about, Justice Kerr, about the delay. There was this alleged 30-hour of delay, but you don't know because there's nothing in the report that says had there been a surgical consult at that first visit or even at the second ER visit that he would have a surgeon would have taken the patient back to surgery at that point in time, because the patient has to have signs and symptoms that warrant a surgery, and her abdominal exam, even with the nurse practitioner's admission exam, is very benign. There's no rebound tenderness or guarding signs of a surgical abdomen that don't exist in this report. But more importantly, there's nothing even in the report that has commentary like that, that a surgeon would have taken her to surgery. And that's the problem, I think, overarchingly with a delayed diagnosis or didn't diagnose case, is without some explanation of what then would have occurred, the report leaves you just guessing as to whether something would have been done or even could have been done. And going to the end, there's the discussion in the report of what the surgeon found when he ultimately operated, which among other things was a global patchy ischemic area of the bowel, which he thought was from her endovascular procedure a few days earlier. And what that says to me is she showered clots or plaques down her mesenteric artery, causing ischemia diffusely throughout that. And my only experience with that as a lawyer has been in cases where my expert says that bowel couldn't be saved, there's no bowel transplant, that is a fatal problem. And so without some sort of explanation of what may have transpired in the future, and it doesn't have to be great, but just something of what would have happened had either the test result, the testing been done, or the surgical consult been done, or the monitoring of vital signs, what would they have told you, and what would have then occurred? And that's what's completely missing from the report.
And you have suggested a remand to see if the trial court will allow the 30-day extension to have the report redone. So I take it that you think that at least theoretically there's something about the situation where the expert could get over the hurdle that you've raised in this appeal?
I assume so, but I don't know that for a fact. I will say under the Scoresby standard, you know, it's very minimal. Is there a commentary from someone with expertise that implicates the conduct of the defendant? I think the report does that because it's somebody that we haven't challenged the expertise of, and he does offer breaches of the standard of care. What is missing is this causation element, and that's why I couldn't, when writing the brief, say, hey, this is so bad, you just need to dismiss and render judgment. And this Scoresby standard is just so low on that this clearly passes that hurdle.
Thank you.
So a couple of little snippets about things that are talked about in the plaintiff's brief, which is that we have this sequence of events that happened in just kind of a factual presentation, and the expert doesn't opine that if something would have done earlier, that we would have derailed that sequence of events. I analogize it to a cancer case. If you're diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, there's not likely much that can be done with you even in today's age. And so if the expert says she was diagnosed with cancer or he didn't diagnose the patient with cancer, that doesn't tell me whether the cancer is survivable or treatable, and I need more information about that. That's the same scenario here, is we don't know whether this could have been treated in any fashion, whether this would have gotten her off the path towards living, whether the sepsis could have been prevented, the things like that that is talked about in a factual pattern but not attributed to Dr. Northcutt's conduct. And that's the real problem with the report, is that there's nothing that is alleged as a harm or discussed as a harm that flows from Dr. Northcutt's conduct as opposed to from the disease process itself. One other little snippet that is mentioned in the factual thing is that when she, between the admissions with Dr. Northcutt, she went home, she vomited, was weak and collapsed, and then she's found tachycardic with elevated heart rate and hyperglycemia, which is high sugar or glucose or sugar in her blood. And my comment about that is even that doesn't describe that as something that Dr. Northcutt's conduct would have prevented, right? She could have still, even if he admitted her to the hospital and got a surgical consultation, she could have still vomited, gotten up to go to the bathroom, and collapsed at the hospital. She still could have ended up with tachycardia or hyperglycemia. None of that is attributed to something that Dr. Northcutt could have prevented, even in this discussion of the factual basis. So the limited snippets we have in the report of things of consequence that seem to be discussed in the report in the factual recitation, none of that is attributed to something that Dr. Northcutt's conduct could have prevented had he done something differently, or was caused by Dr. Northcutt's conduct because he didn't do something differently. And that leaves us with this report of, we've thrown a bunch of things that he violated the standard of care on, but we don't know that it caused any consequence for the patient. And I'll give you a classic example of this is, his last complaint is we didn't do an EKG. Okay, but she didn't suffer a heart attack. What would the EKG have told us about some sort of heart problem that was somehow involved here? She didn't seem to die of any heart problem, so I don't understand why throwing that mud at the wall connects us to anything that harmed the patient. And all of that is where we are in this scenario, because none of it is described in the context of this would have prevented the patient's death, or this would have stopped the patient from suffering pain, or this would have stopped the patient's elevated heart rate. None of that is discussed in the report, leaving us without anything. The last thing I want to discuss in my limited time is I think this court has had it right, and I've picked up out of this court as opposed to some other courts, there's kind of a sliding scale for proximate cause. The more obvious the scenario is, the less complex the statement needs to be. So I analogize that to Beatty versus Fertrell, the Supreme Court case. You know, the anesthesia, the CRNA, stuck something in the eye, and that punctured something in the eye, causing the problem. That's pretty easy to understand. But this isn't that kind of case, right? Because we don't know what the diagnosis, what would have happened had we done what the expert says. We're left with not knowing what the next step would have been. And is that next step something that would have allowed the patient to be treated in a fashion that would have saved her life or prevented her from suffering harm? We don't know because that's missing. This is one of those cases where more is required on the sliding scale because it's a delayed diagnosis. It's not like we directly injured something by sticking something somewhere. It's we didn't make a diagnosis. And so when we didn't make the diagnosis, let's say we made the diagnosis, well, then what would have occurred? And back to stage four cancer, not much can occur. Or back to this case, what would the surgeon have done? Or what would the test results have shown, the labs that we should have ordered, what would they have shown, and what would we have done with those labs? Would they even have been abnormal? We don't know that because the expert tells us nothing about those sort of next steps that are necessary to know whether there's any sort of proximate cause in this case. That's frankly all I have, unless you have questions.
All right, well, thank you very much. The case will be submitted, and Mr. Steimel submits a response in writing, then I believe our letter directed you, if you wish to submit a rebuttal, you'll have 2 days after that to reply any further. So with that, we are adjourned, and everyone's free to go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.